Ja Rastafari. Welcome to GFW Radio. This is... I don't know why I did that, but I did it. We're not re-recording.
It's too late now.
What date is it? August 27th, 2007. August 28th, 2007.
Pick a day.
One of those 2 days. And we're here, as usual, because where else would we be if not here, I ask you. I'm here with the usual crew of GFW Radio, which are amongst the following.
Ryan Scott.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
Sean Malloy.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
So I was in San Diego for 4 days, which no one really cares about. And I don't have much to say about that because I was totally offline, didn't play games, didn't use my laptop, didn't check email, whatever. But I wanted to share this one anecdote. My entire family are gin rummy addicts. So whenever we have, this is a family reunion I go to every year. And so there's always these like competitive card games going on all the whole time. And the winner every year, including this year, is my great aunt, who's 88 years old. Doesn't that rock?
She's running the tables.
Doesn't that warm your cockles?
Pretty fun.
88.
And still in the gin rummy.
Still winning. Kicking everybody's ass. All the way down to my kid, who's 13. All the way up to my brother, who's 40-something. She still wins.
It's tempting to ask what else you did in San Diego since I went to high school there. But
did you?
That's like some serious tangent.
Yeah, nah, I didn't do anything else.
Did you go to any traveling carnivals?
I sat on my ass and I read a biography of Peter the Great.
Did you go to TJ?
So do you think you'll still be as good at Peggle when you're 88?
Goddamn right it will be. Take on
you never lose
punks.
That. It's like a bicycle.
Yeah. Anybody else want to say what they did this weekend now that we're playing sort of like show and tell?
I'll back it up real quick since now that we've already got off the tracks.
Yeah.
I visited
there were no
my
tracks.
Parents in Idaho, and before everyone's sort of jaw drops and say, what the hell, you're from Idaho? No, I'm not from Idaho. My parents moved there, retirement type stuff. And I visited them, and we went to this theme park called Silverwood, and it's like, I don't know, man, Idaho theme park. Imagine basically all their rides are inherited from traveling carnivals.
I heard of this place.
Carnival. And through the speakers throughout the place, they have playing like a fiddle version of Led Zeppelin the entire way through there. So whatever, like, you got in your mind about Idaho, it's probably pretty true, other than the fact that, like, it's really beautiful at the same time. But so looking at all these rides, I was just like, I don't know, man.
So these are
carnival
like,
rides are basically, like, you take engineering 101 students and tell them, like, figure out how to, as many ways as you can to make someone spin.
And like, sure. And not kill them?
No, but how the best ways you can make someone spin with a machine that you could put together with, like, basically no education.
And like scrap metal.
Sorry, it's more than I can do, so I take that back, carnies. But yeah, like, and it's just weird. You know, there's always like the guy taking your tickets for the ride's got like one hand missing or something. And then you start trying to figure out how that happened. And you look and then, oh, you see there's like, a haunted house, but it's a trailer. And then you say, okay, well, it's probably also a meth lab, and there's a big hole in the back of that haunted house trailer, and that's probably when the meth lab blew up and took the guy's hand and got him relocated to the Tilt-A-Whirl or whatever.
Yeah. I think if I was going to get on a suspicious-looking roller coaster, I wouldn't go on the one being manned by a guy with a limb missing. Just, that must be safe.
I used to take on the damn the carnival rides. Whenever the carnival would come to town, I'd always bring like a bag, and I'd put milk and hot dog chunks in it and maybe like a few pieces of bread that so it would sop it up.
Pea soup works really well, too.
You know how there's like this swing? It's like totally busted, and it goes in a circle, and like it's on chains, and they kind of swing out, but then the line goes in a circle around the perimeter, and everyone's around. So it'd be great to just throw it off the swing, open up the bag of milk and hot dog chunks, and then like the same thing. Like, you know, when you get out a zipper or whatever before you hop out real quick, just dump that down on the bottom. But so, yeah, that's the carnival for you. Oh, yeah, one last thing on carnival rides, because I brought this up to a friend, and he pointed out that in Denver, they have, I forget the name of the theme park. It was once a Six Flags, and now they've got this ride. It's basically a giant half pipe, and imagine this huge, ridiculous, like, completely asinine skateboard, And then there are seats, these pods of seat clusters, and they spin around as the big skateboard's doing the half pipe. They're like spinning around at the same time.
Wow.
Well, it's a modified version of like the zipper or something. I've seen that.
No, it's not like the zipper at all. Well, the zippers, like, they basically... we're breaking this shit down. This is what I want to review. Carnival rides.
I give that shit five.
But the zipper, no, the zipper's just something different. Look it up, dude. Google image, man.
All right.
Put meth lab plus zipper.
It'll get you a ride.
So what do we got to talk about?
Well, we're going to talk about BioShock. I'll say up front at the top of this podcast that at the end of this podcast, the two Seans, who are the only ones who are cool enough, smart enough, and responsible enough to have finished BioShock, are going to do a little spoiler extravagapalooza at the end of this podcast.
We're going to break it down.
We'll have a big warning there before they actually start talking. Actually, Darren and Ryan and I won't even be in the room anymore because we don't want to be spoiled.
So that's the end. We'll give you a warning, too.
How far
are you, by the way?
I've only had two play sessions. I just killed the first Big Daddy. So
okay.
I'm still way early on.
I'm only about halfway through.
I was on vacation, so.
How would you know you're halfway through, Darren?
I checked with the Malloy. He said I'm roughly about halfway through. So that's all I needed to know.
So they'll talk about that later. Up front, why don't we go over some of the big issues involving the PC release? Because that was probably the top story of the week for PC news. Lots of kind of icky stuff there. And I know we talked to Ken Levine at 1UP here. And so let's talk about that instead of talking about it.
Yeah. Let's get straight into it.
Attack of the Rage Knots. you want to hit all that part of it first, or you want to actually just cover
it? Yeah, I'll hit that up.
Yeah, start over there.
So, I mean, the technical troubles involving the PC issue, I mean, some of them were legitimate. Some of them weren't troubles, but just things that people weren't expecting and didn't react well to. And, you know, annoying. Like, there's a limit. If you didn't get the Steam version, if you bought the box copy, that you can have two installs per purchase. However, it turned out, though, right, that if you uninstall it, then you get your install back.
But
That
was the general idea. The problem was that, I guess, Ken told us this. He said, basically, they weren't prepared for the amount of success that they had. So, like there's kind of like when Half-Life 2 first launched, you know, Steam was, like, the Steam servers were kind of backed up. The same kind of thing apparently was happening on the back end, where they're supposed to be registering uninstalls of BioShock.
Mm-hmm. It feels like... With all due respect,
that feels like
a bit of a horseshit answer. I mean, how could you not expect a crush on this game that's been hyped and that everyone knew was going to be one of the best?
You know, even John Davison on one of yours was saying that, oh, it's not going to do well. It'll be, you know, a critical darling and it's not going to do well.
Yeah, what does he know? He doesn't work here anymore.
But so there's that. There was issues with ATI compatibility. That's been hot fixed.
I'm still having problems with that, actually.
You are?
Okay. Yeah, the hotfix is out, but I'm still trying to, like, I don't, maybe it's because I have this early test machine I'm playing with right now, but I'm still running into the same issues, but I'm working on it with their tech support.
There's their, you know, anti-piracy, sucky ROM stuff was on there, and then that later became this, I don't know, it was just like this internet virus where you go into a forum and you try to be the first to post that, you know, there's a rootkit that game installed on your computer. Turns out, to my knowledge, that in fact there's not. I mean, Sucky ROM has got all this stuff associated with it that's annoying. It's not a rootkit, though. It's not quite, you know, rootkit bad. But the point I wanted to make, I mean, all week long this was happening, and I was seeing the threads. People on my instant messenger list were hitting me up, like, with this, you know, this moral indignation. Oh, my God, did you hear about this? Did you hear about this? And at some point, you know, it just bugged me because, this is the rage, getting back to the rage knot syndrome. And I think that with the way games discussion goes nowadays with message boards and blogs, and everyone is so desperate to say, look at me, get in this thread, and then also just to be, like, outraged at something, every week there's something, and then that just becomes, okay, this is the focus of our rage this week. And I think that week... I mean, I'm not dismissing. I mean, some of those individually are legitimate and they're annoying, but nor are any of these things new. It's like if you're a PC gamer and a big game comes out, like, when has it ever been fucking flawless? When has it ever been perfect?
Right.
And so much of it gets resolved a week later or whatever. And the bottom line is, I mean, it's easy for me to say because it worked fine. It worked splendidly on my computer at home. I didn't have a single issue, and it's like, hey, I'm playing the game and I'm loving it.
Right. And for anyone that like had an NVIDIA card and only installed it once, which is probably most people, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I mean, you would probably not have any problems.
Right. But I just think that to make a larger point about the internet rage not syndrome is kind of annoying because, I mean, just check it. I mean, if you're listening, I'd say if you listen to this podcast, you probably go into forums and check blogs and stuff too. I mean, I assume you're pretty hardcore like that. And just look at the trend, you know, I mean, and ask yourself, I mean, how serious is this stuff? It's like, it's our version of the, you know, Lindsay Lohan did a fucking line or something, you know, like, I don't know. You got to have something. I mean, like in Hollywood, like if you're not talking about something substantial, let's turn something insubstantial.
I can always understand the frustration of like, cause you've been waiting for this forever. You finally got it in your hands. And then like, there's just some small obstacle, whatever it is that's in your way from enjoying this thing you've been waiting
right,
so
the
long
people
for.
Who pre-ordered it or pre-downloaded it and then couldn't get that last 20% done. I mean, that's got to be frustrating as hell.
That's
right?
the big failing, I think, is that Steam almost like, I mean, for a lot of people, it crashed the day that their preload was supposed to have unlocked. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a point where I seen a screenshot where Steam users, it was down to like 4,000. Mm-hmm. Which is like ridiculous. That's pretty close to like catastrophic failure. And that it was puzzling to me because, I mean, Valve's kind of like had that never again after Half-Life 2. And then here they are, and again, it's like, you know, everything points to this being a big game. They also know internally from how many
right.
people are pre-downloading it. Just look at that stuff and work it out. You're going to have to expect it's going to – what's up?
What? Sorry, I'm just – Jeff's new religious move.
Oh, Jeff's got a Gezerk sticker on his forehead.
I'm promoting Gezerk like on red, behalf of the 1UP Network
the red dude.
On my forehead.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
Sorry.
Anyway, I mean, that was disappointing to me to see
yeah.
that Valve kind of messed up on that one.
Yeah.
But it's at the same time, it also does mean that BioShock's selling really well.
That's also
PC
good news.
Too.
So let's parse out this install issue, though, just a little bit more. Because
okay.
because I read that this issue of you can only have two installs at one time, and when you uninstall and you get one back, mm-hmm. like that sounds groovy to me. Like that, my own personal outrage got lessened after I heard you get it back.
Right.
But then I was reading this morning that's not necessarily
well, it wasn't
working.
It wasn't working right.
It wasn't working as intended, is the way they put it.
Is it now?
What they did is, or I don't know if they have they done this yet, where they upped the number of installs you get to five.
They upped the number of installs to five, and they're also looking to create some kind of like. Mini applets in case it didn't register properly when it uninstalled, it removes it from your system.
Oh, I see.
So it's kind of like a removal.
So they're fixing it.
Yeah, they are actually making concerted effort to like
right.
do right.
So what happens if you just reformat your computer without properly uninstalling that?
That's actually part of the question I had. Basically, that's one of the things they're looking into now.
Okay. The stopgap fix was to email Securom, which is another problem, is that you were getting caught in like a circular loop where 2K would tell you to email Securom to get that fixed, and Securom would tell you to email 2K to get that fixed.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things Ken talked about. He's like, yeah, that circular loop wasn't supposed to be happening. So we kind of gave Securom more autonomy, whatever that means, to fix the problem. So it sounded like, you know, Securom was assuming 2K had to handle it, but really 2K wanted Securom to handle it.
Yeah,
I haven't tried to fix it myself, so I don't know if it actually fixed, but they're well aware of the issues, it sounds
yeah,
like.
It sounds like they're on it. And
yeah.
Sean, I think your point earlier is totally right. I mean, when, you know, as PC gamers, you know, there's no point in being naive and over self-righteous about this. I mean, this is the way it goes for us, and most of us are used to dealing with this issue. To me, it's the problem, though, is just that even if you're a hardcore gamer, there may just come a point where the difference in the versions may be such that they're so close and there's not much of a difference to make that why not just take the easier option?
Right.
That's,
you know?
that's definitely
a concern. And I think that, fortunately in this case, I mean, there is a big, there's still a big difference between the two versions. I mean, it looks beautiful on a PC.
Yeah, it does.
Great.
Seeing it on a high-end PC here at work, and if you do have the opportunity at your house or at a friend's house to see it, it's incredible. It looks freaking great on a high-end PC. So there is that. And there's the control issues. But, gosh, you know, the game's been out a week or so, and, you know, on the Xbox side, everyone's just talking about the game, and on the PC side, everybody's just talking about the install. It's a drag.
Well, until the day
but
comes.
But it wasn't. But that's my thing. It's like, I even saw, you know, to name names, I saw someone from another press thing, a certain Gary, complaining about, you know, fuck PC, this is all trash, and like, yeah, I'm doing the console one, and then listing all the things we covered. But then I was like, really, dude? Did you have that many? Did you run into every single one of those issues that you just listed? Or are you fucking parroting message boards? You know?
And
it's like, I'm not dismissing those again, but insofar as it mattered to you, like, not a single one of those bothered me. One, I didn't get the game in the first week, try to install it on, like, a gigaton of fucking computers. I don't run a cyber cafe and got pissed off because I couldn't populate my goddamn computers with one game. I had an NVIDIA card. That was a big issue because I would be I would have been upset if I had ATI. Very serious. But the fact that they were on it right away is good.
Right. Yeah.
And the other stuff, I mean, like the, you know, Securom, whatever it's called.
Securom.
Like, hey, if it's not a rootkit, it's not killing me, fine. We're used to compromises all along anyway with issues with Punk Buster and all this other stuff. And really, it was like, it didn't describe my experience. That's why I think for a lot of people, in the same way that, you know, when there's like something going wrong with hardware on a console hardware. Yep. And the Red Ring of Death, which is like you can't open any message board without seeing it in one of the top 10 posts, is definitely a real big issue and stuff. But at the same time, there's probably people that don't have a 360 and never had a 360 that love posting in those and like, updating people about it and stuff. I don't know. Just keep it in,
definitely keep it in perspective. I mean, in truth, in a month or whenever, this will be ancient history, and all people will be talking about is the game.
Right. Think about Half-Life 2. Like, no one's going.
All right.
Half-Life,
for sure.
They're not relating the
I was on the hate bandwagon in a big way when Half-Life 2 first came out, because I was one of the people. And again, it was like, it was a crapshoot that way. Like, if that wasn't your experience, you just thought Half-Life 2 was awesome.
Right.
But if your experience was you couldn't fucking play it because you couldn't activate your game because of Steam's problems,
and Dark
then you thought it sucked, and that was my problem.
You know, and that speaks to
Dark Messiah.
Speaks to a larger problem about PC gaming, in that it's no one has the exact same spec setup, so there's always going to be that one person who has the one fucked up situation that just doesn't work. I mean, I'm fortunate here when we were setting up for BioShock. I had ATI cards on a test machine. Wasn't working, so I ripped them out, put in NVIDIA, and worked great. Not everyone has a whole like arsenal of graphics cards at their disposal. So, but I don't know. I mean, like, what was another good example with Dark Messiah? Like, I was the only one who actually had a machine that worked with it. And
that's right. I think a couple of us couldn't play it at all.
That did become a problem because what happened is they didn't get it fixed in the time frame.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I mean, I think give it a little time. And if it goes a month and then beyond, and it's still not addressed, then it's like you've moved on to the next big thing.
But here you got a hot fix coming the same week it releases.
A week.
Yeah, but the only thing that would have prevented, in all of these, the only thing that would have prevented you from playing it is the ATI, and that wouldn't even have prevented you. That was just some stuff with shadows.
It was pretty unplayable. Actually, it was unplayable without it.
Okay,
totally.
It was. But then, and then now they're on that now. So, I mean,
I mean, you could theoretically, you could technically play it, but you couldn't see the enemies. They're invisible.
Floors. Like the water
was. Other than that.
Yeah.
The water was gone. You know, in a city that's underwater, it's kind of hard to.
Here's a good comparison. The recent launch of the iPhone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, there were some issues at the beginning, and it's like, okay, they're there. You're either in the camp that's like, okay, they got a quick fix. I appreciate that. I understand that this is complicated stuff. Or you're the one who never wanted anything to do with iPhone in the first place, and you've got some rival network, and you just wanted to aim all your friends like, haha, and then post the specs.
I hate Apple. Well, right. Certainly, this can definitely bring out the, you know, fuck PC gaming thing. But, I mean, the bottom line is it looks great on, Sean Elliott.
No, sorry, finish.
No, is that
he's going to testify.
Is that it? It looks great on PC, and though I haven't played it on PC, you guys play, it looks like I'll like it better.
I'll save that for later when we get into it, because I really love playing it on the PC.
Mm-hmm. It's so much easier, and just it's so much easier to control, period.
Yeah.
Something related, though, is... as I was firing it up, I found myself digging out like an old mouse and getting the batteries charged on it. And I was like, hey, this might be another potential quick topic for us. And that's like, you have old hardware or something, you're used to a certain mouse or keyboard or a chair that's a certain height or a monitor that tilts at a certain angle. And as soon as you mess with that, like, it just pisses you off. It's like, you know, you got your clutch redone on your car or something, and it's just not the slip's not the same, and it's annoying. And if it's a shooter or something that I want to be technically very proficient at, even more so multiplayer, it's like I got to have this mouse. And I have several mice at home that are better, they're superior, they're rechargeable. They don't have the issue of me, like, always. I mean, the people I play with would testify. I'm like, oh, shit, hold on. And then my voice goes out because I have to press mouse 3 to talk in TeamSpeak or whatever. And it's because the battery's died and I'm running to swap them from the recharger. But it's like that thing fits me like a glove, and I'm so used to it that I don't want to – it's hard to say, okay, even this one's technically better. I'm so used to the fit of that thing. So I was just wondering if you guys had anything like that.
I get that way with keyboards. My fingers get I keep trying to swap out my keyboard, and every time I do, I feel like here at work, I feel like the keys are too mushy. Mm-hmm. I can't stand it. So I've got this keyboard here that is so grotesque. I don't know if you've actually
looked at some fucking disgusting.
Have you looked
shit.
At mine? Yeah, it's well, like it's probably there's like a whole layer of crust on each key. Of like yeah, it's like Cheeto dust and spilled coffee.
Cat hair at home on my home one.
But yeah, that's the one.
Drawer full of keyboards, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I've been collecting a whole. Upon. You didn't realize this. I have a whole drawer full of keyboards. If you're really that desperate,
really?
Yeah, seriously. I've told.
Right after this,
we have so many here. Yeah, I'm the same way though. I don't want to change keyboards either, and I got like that permagrime on mine too. It's basically the fucking whiskey nerd scenario, but like reality because
yeah,
it's just nasty. I mean, every time something's falling down in there, a Cheeto or something. It just goes and lives in there. I seen an ant come out of my keyboard.
That's awesome.
Hi, Sean.
I had one.
Keep the food coming. We've got a whole family down here.
Or like you're too lazy to even just get some dust off or like some Windex and you just kind of like wipe it with your finger. Kind of wipe a key clean.
Or you just like get your shirt or try to get a napkin or something. Yeah. I had this one key. I had this one keyboard where, like, I kept, like, same thing, like Cheeto grip, potato chips and all that. I ended up, after years of use, the keys are gone. I can't actually see what the keys are anymore. It's just, like, grit.
WASD.
Every once in a while, my wife will walk into our office at home and go, like, how can you see in that monitor? And I'll be like, what? And then I'll take a closer look, and it's like, oh, yeah, I've, like, sneezed on it, like, for months. There's, like, drops of snot and, I don't know.
Screaming. No, as you're playing Guild Leader and WoW, just saliva from you screaming.
Yeah, more dots!
I forgot what I was going to say.
Whatever, that's cool.
Ryan, do you have a favorite, you know, keyboard mouse setup? You're spending hours kind of poop-socking your games. So.
What the hell? I don't really have that kind of intent attachment like you guys do. I mean, I replace my keyboard every few months, you know, when it gets to the point where I can't stand how much
that's pretty often.
Has fallen into it.
I was going to say,
that's
man,
often.
I'm the hardware guy. I mean, I get new keyboards all the time. I don't change my keyboard that much.
Maybe it's like once a year. I don't know. But it's you know, I don't keep the same keyboard for like years at a time.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm so used to bouncing around between like, mine and Keith's and like the one at work and then the other one at work and my laptop that like I don't feel attachment to anything anymore. I mean, I do get annoyed when like the F row is a little higher on one than another one, so I'm like reaching like, oh crap.
Or those hitting that nasty plastic like, spot ergonomically designed split keyboards.
I hate those things.
They always have those at game studios when I go for previews and stuff and I'm like,
See, you guys, do you guys,
I was never
type
classically
the right way?
What do you mean, type the right way?
Like, do you keep your fingers on the right key?
Are you a touch typist?
Yes.
Yes.
I had typing class in
Ryan
school.
And me are hunt and peck.
I'm a hunt and peck, seriously.
Ryan attacks, though.
Ryan is the world's fastest hunt and pecker.
Which you hear
that might have sounded wrong in the speaker.
He hits
and that was fully intentional.
He's a hunt pecker and he hits that shit hard.
No, it's true.
He goes deep
we
ought
to take a YouTube video. Oh, I'm sorry. God. Game videos video of Ryan typing.
I have gotten many, many comments.
I can always tell when some furious email is coming because you can hear it 20 feet away. Oh, I know I was going to ask you guys along the same topic. Do you have any trouble gaming on a laptop?
Oh, yes. Hell yeah.
Okay.
So that's not just me. Sending email on a laptop.
What are you gaming?
Well, probably WoW, right?
Well, usually WoW. But I do have trouble with it.
Well, the keyboard is so compressed. And like a lot, I mean, if you have a desktop replacement keyboard, you know, notebook, they have like larger keyboards with the number pads, and that kind of helps. But for the most part, like it's.
And I need a mouse plugged in.
Yeah, it's the mouse.
Oh, yeah,
I have a trackball for it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Because you can't really, and I don't really have a spot. Like, I sit on the couch and just have the trackball on, like, the arm of the couch. Because they don't have space to move a mouse.
Is it one of those chairs with the trackball built in?
Oh, that'd be awesome. I'm not that cool, though.
Not that cool. Yeah. I don't know how cool that is.
I mean, I wouldn't want a trackball if I was playing, like, an FPS, but then I wouldn't be playing an FPS with, like, my laptop anyway.
Yeah.
And it's good for imprecision games, you know, Galactic Civilizations.
Yeah.
Wow.
I keep thinking at some point I'll get to the point where my main computer is just a laptop, but then I just really always find gaming inferior.
No, you need, if you're going to game, you need a desktop.
I want the big-ass desktop
monitor. Some games need it. Yeah.
Well, if the day ever comes, they actually have reasonable, like, upgradability for notebooks. They keep talking about it, but it's not quite there.
I don't understand why. I don't.
They don't have a standard. They usually don't have a standardized chip, you know, pinout, so you could can't replace one card with another.
Yeah, well, that's stupid.
Exactly. Hey, before I forget, Sean. So you mentioned your favorite mouse with the tape around it and shit.
The tape is because the battery case. I lost
Which kind is it?
And so I have to tape the shit to hold it in there. It's just some Microsoft one. It's got a pair of thumb buttons, and it just sits right. I mean, so they make some of these ones are so spacey, and it's like. The inset for your thumb goes too far in, or the buttons are made for a smaller hand, so they're set too far back for me. It's just like that's just the mouse for me. I like that thing. It's kind of like the difference for me between going now between a 360 controller and a PS2 one. I really don't like the PS2 six-axis controller.
I don't either. I hate it.
Part of that's the shape, and the other part is just the analog sticks. Insubstantial it is, too. Just put some fucking lead in there or something, because it's like a... You know, it's holding a piece of paper controlling your game.
Yeah. For me, it's the analog sticks just don't feel right.
The analog sticks don't feel right. Yeah, they're cheesy.
They feel too
flimsy
loose.
Feeling. Yeah. And they shouldn't be, they should be cups, not, convex surfaces.
Yeah. So your thumbs kind of, slip into them more. Yeah.
So, Ryan, this is going to be a rad transition. You were telling me you wanted to go on a rant because... Your games have been punishing you.
Well, it's sort of there's a very specific mini rant.
We need theme music when we do when for Ryan's mini
Ryan's
rant.
Ryan's rants.
You ruined it. Sean could have just dropped some in.
Okay, yeah, right.
Okay.
Ryan.
Oh God,
we get your letters.
Ryan's rants.
It needs to be the music from YouTube Trolls video, the one the one. Pride in life.
Ryan knows.
That reminds me, we'll have to start that next week. I want to do as an alternative to Heroes of the Web, which we'll have one of today, kind of a must-view websites of the week. I don't have them this week. We'll hit them next week. But that could be one. I don't have the URL for it.
Bookmark file full of those.
Well, yeah.
That's good stuff.
Make them family-friendly, though.
Can do some blog synergy.
I was kidding.
Okay, Ryan, it's time for your rant.
Well, speaking of hastily, angrily typed emails and such,
yeah,
this is something I blogged about last night or the day before. I just recently started playing Final Fantasy XII on my PlayStation 2.
I'm sorry.
Which,
Hey, it's good.
I don't know why I said that.
I'm kind of late getting to that since it's been about a year since it came out. But, there's this item in Final Fantasy XII. It's the most powerful weapon in the game. It's called the Zodiac Spear.
I've been hearing about this all friggin' day.
Okay, well, so when I play an RPG, which is very rare for me because, RPGs are very time-consuming, and, I'm
It's all you play,
busy.
Dude.
Well, no, RPGs and MMORPGs.
It's very rare for you.
Oh, as opposed to an MMO.
MMOs are...
Well, yeah. it is different. But, right. When I play just, a single-player RPG, I'm the type of person who has to, obsessively find everything, explore every nook and cranny. I do not rest.
Blown your mind, then.
Yeah. I do not rest until I've conquered the game, whatever game I'm playing. Mm-hmm. And, most Final Fantasy games and, other RPGs, there's certain, pieces of content that, if you don't get to them in time or you don't fulfill a certain condition, the content in question will be locked out to you, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you can chalk that up to just, whoop, you forgot to explore everywhere, that's fair. But this item in Final Fantasy XII, you get it toward the end game, and there are in the very beginning of the game, there are these four specific chests, because, you know, there's like treasure chests all over the place that you open. There are these four very specific chests in very specific locations, all very mundane, normal chests, that if you open any of these four chests, you lose the ability to easily access this item, this Zodiac Spear, at the end of the game. But, like, how would you know that?
There's no warning.
There's no indication.
How would any player know that? Even like, you know, even if I go through the game not caring about this stuff and then go through a second time to carefully get everything, how would I even know that that's going to happen unless I was using a strategy guide?
When Sakaguchi-san gives you lemons, you make lemonade.
That's how, dude.
And maybe this is an example of Sean's like rage knot syndrome.
But wait, you said it doesn't make it impossible though. Just makes it harder.
Okay. When I say it doesn't make it impossible though, I guess there's another place you can get it at like a 0.1% drop rate, which might as well be zero as far as I'm concerned. So
you're basically saying you open a chest like you like anyone does in a game that trains you to do nothing but open chests.
Right.
All of a sudden,
you
it's
can't
like,
get the best weapon.
But bam! Bitch, you ain't playing with a good weapon. So it'd be like in Bioshock, you know how you loot corpses and stuff?
Uh-huh.
All of a sudden.
Or a storage crate.
And you just hit E so fast, I'm like, I don't even care.
Right,
if
yeah,
I get
totally.
Drunk, whatever. I got to go.
Yep.
But then all of a sudden it was like, now you can no longer
use you smoked that cigarette pack back
electroplasmids because you opened.
It's arbitrary random.
This corpse.
Right.
Is it like that?
It's totally like that.
Damn, that's stupid.
That is dumb.
It's ridiculous. I feel like I'm having the conversation a year ago because I had this conversation a year ago.
That's why it's a PS2 game, not a PC game.
So have that. Yeah.
It's totally just like you need to go buy a strategy guide, and this is our transparent ploy to make you go buy a strategy guide.
Like, how would anybody know that? How is that even like a logical?
It's not. It's ridiculous.
You know, way of thinking.
Yeah. Well, okay, I know this is going to seem like a weird tangent, but I hopefully there's some relation here. But I've wondered in World of Warcraft, actually, when there's these, you know, epic quest lines, or Sean, you could address this, and that there's chains where, you know, to do the highest level content, there will be a quest chain. But in certain of these quest chains, the chain actually literally stops, and it only progresses by, like, talking to some specific NPC in some town or something that doesn't have the question mark over his head, where it's just like, oh, well, to get to the next part of the chain, you're going to have to talk to this dude over here. And I want to know, like, how anybody ever knew to do that without a strategy guide.
Do they tell you the guy's name that you have to talk to, at least?
No.
I don't know what you're referring to specifically. I can't remember.
I'm referring to something along the...
What the?
Sorry.
Are you sure you just weren't too high level to like
having
a question mark? Because that happens sometimes. If you out level the NPC.
No, I actually don't think so. I think there's a place where, because I know on the guild, I'm sorry, I'm just totally blanking which quest. Mm-hmm.
Okay,
is.
So we're talking about carnival rides.
But no, wait, hold on. My point is that again,
what do you mean, hold on?
Because
put
other
you
people in the
track.
Guild were complaining about the same thing. So my point is in a way sort of the same. I'm just saying this seems like something you had to know. It wasn't readily available in the game as something that any gamer could get. You had to have knowledge. They either came from somebody who could warn you ahead of time or from a strategy guide.
That's how all games used to be, flat out, though. I mean, taking it way, way back. Castlevania 2, the classic example.
What happened to that, Sean? At the cliffside?
The cliffside. I mean, anything, just games were like that. You wouldn't even, not only would you not know like what you're supposed to do, but something would happen and you wouldn't know what it was. You physically would not know what the hell the object was. I mean, that's just kind of like
the
legacy,
ET game was
legacy
based on.
Gaming stuff, you know?
That's back when people were smarter.
Yeah, so why is that happening now? You know, like,
well, it wasn't a requirement to continue to make progress. The example Jeff is giving is, but your example, it's just arbitrarily like messing with you. It's just saying,
well, that's my problem.
Your WoW example, there's no like,
could you
never
just load your last save?
You can never get this quest chain because you talked to the wrong NPC. It's just like, you just got to figure out where he is.
Yeah. I'll have to come back and look at that.
Okay.
While we're on this topic.
Ryan's thing is dumb, though.
Yeah, your thing is dumb.
My thing's awesome.
Agreed.
No, awesome, but dumb.
There are 53 replies to my blog post agreeing with me. Well, most of them are. So.
That makes you fucking
There's only four of
that
you.
Tell it, Ryan.
In the internet world, you're right.
How good did that feel to see that and know that 53 people got your back?
I pretty much
48. I pretty much counting for a few double posts.
You guys should all get torches and march down the square's office. That's all 54 of you.
It's like a million nerd march right there.
I pretty much win the internet
on this year-old debate.
You know, this just reminded me of the I finally turned them off yesterday. Yes, I'm playing the 360 BioShock for now. I'm sorry if that makes me less of a PC gamer, but I am. But I finally turned off the fucking Quest Arrow. I wish that just would die forever.
It's rad that it's there, because just like you were saying, you know, the point where you're like, oh, I'm supposed to go find this guy, but he's not marked as a quest giver.
Yeah.
When you hit your own personal version of that moment in BioShock, you turn the arrow on for all of 10 seconds, and then you turn it back
off. It's there for you as an option.
Yeah, that's true.
Or you turn it off. The thing, I agree, I generally don't like that sort of thing, but what's so awesome about, you know, BioShock is every step of the way, it allows you to create the experience you want. And if you don't want to play, you know, all you want to do is shoot and combo your powers and stuff, you can turn that on, follow the path. I don't advocate that, but I mean, it's there if you want to, and no one's making you do it. You know, you can turn it off. You can turn it off if you want to find every item. You know, you don't want to just run in, because I always complain about how, for me, when you have a big flashing item with like a on-screen notice telling you to do something to it, then all I read it, I sort of like step outside of the game world's own logic, and instead of being, I don't know, a flux capacitor or something, it's just there. It's just the floating shit. I go press E on. So I can turn that off. I mean, we talked about it last week, but I think it's just incredible that they've allowed you that much freedom in
the more.
It's like building in, it's almost like building in the hint guide in a sense. I mean, like,
it's totally obsolete in that not necessarily, because there's not quite a level of like, please provide codes for safes and doors that require the passcode. I mean, it doesn't have that.
Right. It's not telling you where all the audio diaries are hidden.
But it's enough to give you, like, it's like, it reminds me, like, we've talked about this before, but it reminds me of those old those Sierra hint books with the highlighter. Like, you only, like, reveal what you need to know, and then you just kind of, like, you figure out the rest on your own, which is perfect for me. But if, like the situation you're talking about, Sean, where, like, you can't, you're like, okay, do I make a left here or a right? What's going on? And the arrow points you there, and you can just turn it off afterwards. That's all I want.
It's options like that I'm constantly surprised that more games don't let you do all that stuff. I'm just like, how could you not want me to be able to, you know, some games just don't let you switch controls and stuff. Well, there you go. Yeah. They're all Zodiac Spears.
Yeah.
But like, even a game that like doesn't let you meddle with the controls, this is more console than PC, obviously, but like, how could you not let me do that? It's just obnoxious.
At this point, there's just no excuse. I mean, especially on the PC.
Yeah.
Since we're going to be doing a lot of BioShock talking, do you want to take a vote? Do you want to talk about Two Worlds, or do you want to talk about
what, an on-air vote?
Medal of Honor.
We should take a
Airborne.
Break first.
Well, we'll take a break.
Not G.
Let's vote first, then take a break.
Okay, vote first.
All those.
Well, I'm the only guy who played Two Worlds, so I'm going to say let's hold off until next week. If anyone else is going to try it.
I want to try it. I don't know. They didn't send me a copy.
Let's take a break. Break it down.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll have made our decision, and then we'll discuss that decision.
Yeah.
And other things.
Check out Jeff.
After.
Styrofoam nunchucks.
I got my styrofoam nunchucks.
Dalsim, dude.
I'm badass.
He's like Bruce Leibowitz. All
right, we'll be right back.
3, 2, 1. You're the best.
Listen to EGM Live, the weekly podcast for Electronic Gaming Monthly, available every Monday for download at egmlive.oneup.com or podcast.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
Sweep the leg, Johnny.
We're back. And we're not going to talk about either of the things we said we were, because we're just radical that way. Instead, we're going to talk about Guild Wars, because Ryan's been playing the next expansion pack, Eye of the North. Or is it Eyes?
Eye of the
singular
North.
Eye? One eye. And how is it?
It's a squinty eye.
Well, what little I've gotten to play, I mean, they just had like kind of a sneak peek weekend for all the people who pre-ordered the game, which, you know, they unlocked a very limited amount of content just for over the weekend for players. Mm-hmm. And, it's, I mean, a lot of it's kind of more the same, you know, I mean, it's kind of what you expect.
In an MMO?
Well, yeah.
So
shocking.
You get quests.
You get quests.
You kill stuff, and then you get loot.
You do, yeah. And
that's awesome.
The big difference with this is that it has no content designed for new players. You have to have a character who has gone through... Well, you have to have a character who is at least level 29. I believe you have to have finished one of the three existing Guild Wars campaigns. And and Eye of the North is this new region in the map, the area in the original Guild Wars, which is the continent is called Tyria, and it shares like that map for those of you who have the original Guild Wars. And
but that's very standard expansion pack stuff, right? Just high level content for existing players.
Yeah,
this is the first time Guild Wars has done it. I mean, each of the other expansions, you know, Factions and Nightfall, they were complete campaigns that you could play from level 1 to 20 without owning any previous Guild Wars product. So this is the first one for experienced players only.
Since you've played all of them, I've been wondering this since I'm playing Nightfall now and I'm up to level 10, and this is the first one that I've gotten into.
Mm-hmm.
Were the factions in Nightfall, if you already had a level 20 character from the first one, mm-hmm. is it something you would want to take that same character through these new campaigns?
Absolutely.
Yes?
Yeah. I mean, my main character, he's a ranger from factions.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's nothing keeping you from going through
the other
games. It's
not too easy to be doing campaigns that were starting with people playing at level 1?
No. Well, I mean, the beginning content in any campaign is going to be, you know, a cakewalk for a level 20 character, but most of the content in each campaign is balanced for level 20 characters. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're going to get a full game out of each of those.
Okay, so what can folks expect from Eye of the North?
Well, not very many new skills this time around. Usually each of the new campaigns has, 50 or 60 new skills per class.
Seems like a lot.
It is a lot. But this one has only 10 skills per class, which is...
Is that including those like dungeon-only ones that they were talking about?
Well, there's a set of PvE-only skills that, so far as I can tell, they are given out as quest rewards. I don't really count those quite as much, though, since those aren't like universally useful, like in PvP and stuff.
Right.
But
you can see Sean Elliott fading away over there.
Wake me up, we're done.
But I mean, like over the course of the weekend, like, you know, I already unlocked all my Rangers. 10
Damn!
Skills.
Already in the sneak preview weekend.
I mean, you just buy them from the vendor.
So wait, maybe they just didn't have all the skills in the sneak peek. Are you sure that...
I'm sure there are only 10 per profession. Yeah.
Are these, like, crazy skills that, like, just are like look awesome? And
There are a couple really good ones, at least that I noticed. There's this old Ranger elite skill. Elite meaning you can only take one elite skill with you at any given time.
Okay.
There's this elite Ranger skill from the original game called Barrage, which for a lot of people pointed that as the kind of noob Ranger elite skill.
Okay.
For babies. But so what Barrage does, basically, you know, you can hit 6 enemies at once, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a new skill. I forget what it's called. It's like Rapid Fire, maybe. I'm thinking of the wrong name. But it's basically a non-elite version of Barrage that does a little bit less damage and only hits 3 people and not 6. So that's pretty awesome. I can tell
awesome.
That you guys agree.
you're not really selling me
yeah.
so far. Yeah.
Sean Elliott's excited.
It's funny because, like I said, that Guild Wars is the first like true. Well, it's not even true MMO, but next to like Phantasy Star Online MMO type game mm-hmm. that I played for a while. But I just hit a wall on all of them after a while. They just don't sustain my interest after, you know, maybe 2 weeks of play, 2 or 3 weeks of play. So now just the fact that it's on, you know, the third expansion, and it's like I got bored before the first one came out.
Did
Sorry.
You, when you were playing Guild Wars, like what level did you get to, like level 20 and finish?
Yeah, I got to level 20, and I didn't finish it, but I the ascension is a big, you know, element of the narrative in it, and I did that, and it was cool. But then it was like, no, I just wanted something else, wanted another experience, and I messed with the auto assault, was fun. and then hit a point with that, and then we'll see how long I play Tabula Rasa.
It's around, you know, I think it's around level 20. I mean, or 25 or so. I think when is it that people hit that grind point in most games? Is it around then, right?
Yeah, I mean, it varies game to game, but yeah, but
what a level means is totally different,
right?
But, I mean,
but certainly after a certain amount of hours, but, you know, when the novelty is worn off, the level, you know, hitting the next levels, it gets to be progressively harder. You've either like made friends in the game or not. You know,
yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, I had friends in the game, but it was just that it just gets progressively more difficult. And
yeah,
that's my problem. I was getting less out of it. I understood the game. I understood the mechanics of it, and I was like,
it's also the distance between like the big carrots.
Yeah,
you know, if like at level 40, and WoW, there's like the mount, and that's like this thing you got to get. You got to get the mount, and then when you get that,
yeah,
suddenly that's where a lot of people drop off.
That's right.
Big desert of like, oh my god, now what?
Yeah, like 42 or so is when people really start losing it in WoW, because there's nothing until 60. You've spent all your time trying to get the mount, and now it's like, oh,
hey, I'm level 40.
I'm facing a void. I'm having trouble in Guild Wars for some of those reasons. I mean, first of all, I find some of the game mechanics confusing, and there's not nearly as much information given.
Like, I know one of the
I ranted to you about this.
We were talking about, yeah, like the fact that you have to buy skills.
Yeah, and the game doesn't explain that to you. You know, I mean, there's certain basic mechanics. I was like, wow, I sure wish I knew that four levels ago when I could have actually bought some skills. That kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like the kind of thing I don't even think about at this point, but it's a good point.
Earlier today, though, I just revealed to Jeff that the electro bolt would stun machinery in Bioshock. And you're like, oh, no one told me that.
No, that's not it at all. I knew it could. The problem was I couldn't swap it out. What I didn't know was if I took out electro bolt early on, I wouldn't be able to put it back until another slot opened up. So,
or anytime until you found the gene
bank, right?
Right, because I didn't hit the first gene bank yet, but I already have a big daddy to kill. An electroshock is gone.
It's sitting. The beauty of the game. Don't kill him. Just wait. He'll still be there.
Yeah, we'll see.
He ain't going nowhere.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. And the other thing about Guild Wars is the community. I find it, maybe it's just because I don't have my little buddies yet, but I don't have any little buddies yet, so I find it harder to make friends in that game.
Just tell them who you are, and you'll find some.
You'll find plenty of friends.
Yeah.
I'm Jeff Green.
Go in there and brag. You know who the fuck I am?
Now watch tonight. There's going to be a hunter named Jeff Green.
You'd be lucky to have me in your guild. No, so I joined the first guild where someone just ran by and said, you want to be in a guild? And it's like, yeah, sure. And then, of course, they were complete
douchebags. What's your name in the game, your character name? Knowing that if you say it now, you'll get a bunch of friend invites.
Well, it might help explain why I'm not. I don't have that many friends yet, so. What, I have to say it?
You don't have to. It's your call.
Right, it's
all eyes on you.
Don't bitch about not having friends, though, if you won't even tell the world your name.
I'm a retard.
They let you, is it?
Yeah.
They let you have that?
Well, I spelled retard with an H in the middle.
Okay.
Wait, retard?
Well. Yeah. See, now you totally deflated my argument.
You do it to yourself, man.
I don't have any friends. Wonder why.
Hey, you know what?
Yeah, let's just move on.
That's pretty tame compared to some of the names in that game, though. Yeah.
But I did join a guild, and then the guild talk immediately was like the lamest, you know, I just quit. Like,
I can't believe at this point in your MMO career you would randomly just join a guild because someone asked.
I know. That's how desperate I was to be liked and accepted.
I'll hang out
join
with you
my guild.
Guild
All right.
Yeah.
Now that we're deep in the mode and we're talking about, well, not retards, but now that we're talking about whatever
yes,
it is, I think it's ready to just go to move on to Hero of the Web.
All right. Please save us with the Heroes of the Web.
So this
get
tip
us out
off
of this rut.
The comes from Muddy Junk. That's his name, of course. Muddy Junk.
You can group up with him, Jeff.
And he pointed me to a thread on the official Mass Effect forums, the topic being what he calls blue alien poontang. And he says it's a nice mix of incoherent and pedantic. So starting it off, user Vlee574. And mind you, this is for a game that hasn't been released yet. Fiction for it already exists. The official fiction, the not Mass Effect novel, has been released. So, Vlee.
For those of you saying you cannot have sex with her as wrong, in the book it clearly states that the Asari are very skilled lovers. In other words, great and bad. They may not fall in love or be attracted to males, but that doesn't mean they don't enjoy having sex like everyone else. I assume they have all the correct tools as they breast, and they wouldn't be all that great in bed if they had no, well, you know what I mean.
Winds and Rings responds,
okay, your shoemates are human and therefore respond positively to touch, whether it is from a human or another animal. Second, yes, petting is pleasurable for animals, but not necessarily sexual. Let's put it this way. Say there's an alien species out there who get really turned on by elbow rubs with their mate. That's their idea of foreplay. Estrogen and testosterone comes shooting out of their brain by the truckload. Well, if one of those aliens came up to a human and started rubbing elbows, the human may logically and intellectually know what's going on. But since it's not a turn-on for us, none of those pleasure hormones are love hormones. Our brain would not respond to some other species' incompatible foreplay. Which is the reasoning behind some of the arguments with the Asari? If they're not sexual and are not wired to be sexual, they may not respond sexually, i.e. chemically, to acts, even though they may be technically, biologically, able to carry such acts out. A human is physically capable of rubbing elbows, but it's never going to make the human desire sex or have sexual release.
Oh, my God.
That doesn't need a comment.
What is this in reference to?
You got to buy
some aliens and Mass
Effect. I don't even know it.
Future science fiction author.
All I say to that is, you're some kooky midgets, pull the fingers out your ass and sniff the dookie digits.
I've seen that website.
What? Why are people having conversations like that?
I don't know. But it's all like, and those were just like a few samples. I really could have read it for hours and hours because it's an enormous thread that just goes on. And it's not just two people going, it's not just those two buffoons going back and forth. But I mean, it's like seemingly everyone in the community sounding off because, I mean, it's clearly important that you establish if you can have sexual, like, why is it a question anyway? Is it, you're not going to fuck the Asari in Mass Effect when it comes out.
So. I like the guy who assumed that they had the proper tools. Based on what?
Yeah,
what they're fucking fictional.
He looked.
They don't exist.
He walked under one and counted the holes. What's going on there, man?
Yeah.
So, how do we go from there?
I don't know. I just want to kill myself after that.
All right, let's just go into.
Well, we don't have much time left.
We're going to Medal of Honor Airborne. Then, real quick, the demo for PC is out this week, and
yes,
it's,
sir.
People seem to like it quite a bit. The demo is taken from the first level in the game. And the rest of the game, I'd say, as Medal of Honor goes, it's pretty good. It's a pretty good Medal of Honor game.
You're playing this for a review, correct?
For review, yeah. Okay. And, you know, I've gone through it a couple times now. The thing is with it, everything that they promise, you know, all their bullet points that you can, you know, you airdrop into the action, you land where you want, and then from there you fight in, you know, whatever battle you choose. They deliver just that, and it works really well. The verticality of the levels is definitely paying off, you know. So by which I mean, you know, you land on a roof somewhere, and you have the advantage of height on a certain group, and you can go down somewhere else. And it's definitely fun in that you, I don't know. I mean, in the way that I like the later levels of Call of Duty 2 that gave you the option, say, hey, you have these three objectives, and you can go and do them in whatever order you want. It makes it more replayable. It's fun. Part of what makes it work is that the AI has got some definite issues, but what it does, so first off, you know, to praise it, it's really mobile. So they relocate a lot. I mean, it's not just a matter of they go behind a single crate and will continue to pop up and down until you finally kill them. They will do that in periods, but then just as often they will run away and, you know, take cover somewhere else, or I don't know if it's like they're trying to flank you. Half the time it just seems haphazard. It just seems like they're moving, but the fact that they are moving makes it fun. But they have this annoying thing, especially, and I've seen people calling it my zombie battalions, because in the first level is in Operation Husky. So you're fighting some Italian black shirts, and they just want to rush you and melee the hell out of you. And that can get annoying because I mean, you drop into a place that's more difficult than you should. It gives you the option of dropping into a safe zone marked by green smoke and mm-hmm. where you can resupply with health and ammunition and stuff. But if you go into a difficult area, they all just like fucking bum rush you and they're all just whipping you. And it's giving you this motion blur effect. They're all around you, beating you. And that's pretty annoying. So that stuff's fun. It gets overblown. But my problems with the game, and I've seen this repeated elsewhere too, is for some weird reason, the people that make Medal of Honor have decided that they have found their own sweet spot for the amount of damage that any of their NPCs should take before dying. And it's far too much, I think, especially after games like Call of Duty have proven if you take a rifle like a Kar 98 or a Garand, these are basically, well, the Kar is a bolt action. You take a weapon, even a submachine gun, a single burst will down an enemy. And here's why it pays off. Because in a shooter, when you look around, you scan your environment, you see a lot of movement. And in the same way that tests, you know, that psychologists do and neuroscientists show, hey, that hardcore gamers are like very good at sort of, you know, you show them a screen. You know, you ever take a glaucoma test? This is a good way to compare it. They've never explicitly done it, but it's the same thing. It's like how many red dots appeared on the screen right then. Well, gamers are great at that. And especially people that play shooters and stuff. So what happens is you do that. You count the dots on the glaucoma screen, but then you immediately go, boom, work the bolt, shoot this guy, work the bolt, shoot this guy, or a submachine gun burst or whatever. And after you've counted the threats, you've also prioritized them, and you decide, okay, I'm going to dispatch them in this order. But the problem is you do that same line of processing in Medal of Honor, but instead of them just going down, you hit them square in the chest with like a very big round, and then they go down, but they're not in a wounded animation or limping or mm-hmm. showing that they've been hit. They're just going back into cover, and they pop back up again. You hit them again, and it's like, okay, can I go to the next target? And then you do, and you look back, and you're like, there's Boyo again, and he's coming back up for more. So you got to you reload again and blast him in the face one more time, and what happens is, or even if he's running across the street, and you're just like, unload, just keep going. You're like, okay, counting the bullets down. 32, that's it. Time to reload. Dude's still running into a house. It eventually gets pretty annoying. And realism isn't a thing, because I've talked before about how you take a shooter in, Ostfront, Red Orchestra, and you go for more realism in that scenario. And that's not fun either, because it means you move slow, you get wounded. I mean, like in Armed Assault, you get shot in the leg and you basically spend the rest of the level crawling. I mean, that's stupid too. So that's not the case, and it's not a realistic game. But at the same time, just for it, purely rewarding the experience of it, I mean, they need to do that, and it causes some serious problems throughout the game.
But definitely, just to interrupt for a sec, some of what you're talking about, I mean, in addition to the comparison with shooters like Red Orchestra, there's certainly other shooters, in a non-realistic setting where enemies can be a total bitch to kill.
Right.
I mean, don't you think that is playing part of it here, that it is a realist, that it's a World War II thing, that these guys aren't going down when they're getting a machine gun full of lead to the face?
I think it is, because it's part of it's your expectations. We have certain – whenever you defeat a player's expectations of something, then they're going to be fighting whatever fiction you're creating. And so that could be some of it.
I mean, if it was a big, giant, floating, flaming eye coming at you,
then
why isn't this guy
going
down?
But it still would get annoying. Say if every single zombie in Doom 3 required about 8 shotgun blasts or whatever, mm-hmm. then I think you would still run into the same problem. But I think, you do have a point there in that you expect something because you know the setting, and you're like, okay, that's ridiculous. And they really do push it. Here's something, another comment I want to make about the series is that they continually market it as, like, this is real war, and they always try to outdo one another. You know, they have various colonels and sergeants and everything that they bring to their...
They send you to boot camp.
That's so funny. That's so true.
That they bring to, to all the press demos and stuff like that.
We got a general.
And they talk about... Yeah, and then they even talk about, like, what our military... liaison outranks the one that the other series uses. I've actually heard that, between Medal of Honor, Call of Duty, and Brothers in Arms. And so they try to present this case. And then the other thing is that, they say everything in this game is based on realism, the way that you upgrade your weapons. Soldiers really modify their weapons in the field. But No, I don't know about any soldiers getting five headshots and all of a sudden, like, a better bolt appearing inside their gun in a flash of in a flurry of bullet time that allowed them to jack five more dudes. And then, like, so they're taking it. But Medal of Honor is the one, to me, that's the most, like, it's part of an older tradition of Sergeant Rock, Nick Fury, you know, Sergeant Fury in the Howling Commandos, mm-hmm. Captain America, all comic book movies, but also John mm-hmm. Wayne movies and stuff, the way that, you know, World War II was treated for a very long time. And ironically, it was Saving Private Ryan, and with it, Band of Brothers for HBO, both helmed by Spielberg, mm-hmm. who also kickstarted the Medal of Honor series, that sort of changed the environment and said, okay, now we can expect different things. You know, while neither there's, you know, any kind of a bolt counter can say that there's problems in those movies too. They can say, well, why the hell was it a Mustang that did the strafing run on the tank instead of a P-47 Thunderbolt? That's bullshit. They can do all this kind of stuff like that. They were, compare it to John Wayne and Sands of Iwo Jima or whatever, it's like, okay, it's definitely a step up. But mm-hmm. Medal of Honor, despite that, Medal of Honor has been the one that it's the series that's got the health packs that you run over. You know, mm-hmm. it's the one now that turns everything about itself into a mini game. So, like I was saying, you get a certain number of headshots or good quick kills in rapid succession, and you're awarded a bonus on your weapon. You airdrop into one of five secret hidden locations in each mm-hmm. map and land on the target and you get extra points, you know.
That didn't happen in real life?
Yeah, so it's got all this, but... yeah,
you don't get an achievement. You just killed a Nazi.
Again, it doesn't need to... none of these are wrong, because those are fun. Those can be sure. fun gameplay things, but it just seems funny that they present it one way, because ultimately in this game... it starts to really go crazy in that at one point these jackbooted SS guys in gas masks step off this train and they're all, you know, firing MG42s from the hip, which I'm told could be done, but it's pretty damn ridiculous. You're not going to be able to reload. You're not going to be able to do anything. But anyway, like, aside from that, they get out and I'm like, okay, this is cool. Like, here comes, you know, the Red Skull's minions. And I start shooting these dudes in the face, and I hit him with the full clip, like, you know, right in this guy's grill. And he's like, okay, he's still shooting. And he's mowing down all my guys. And then I throw a Gammon bomb at him, which just think of basically being like a super powerful grenade. And then like a few more rounds, and you just deal with stuff like that, you know, increasingly. It's like, okay, well, this is interesting. And I just kind of wonder, like, well, why don't they? It's like it's just something about Medal of Honor. It's somewhere in between Wolfenstein and mm-hmm. Brothers in Arms.
I was just about to say. I mean, from the I didn't get too far until I played like the first level or so, getting into the second, and it didn't turn into like Castle Wolfenstein, like you said, right away. I mean, like, at what point does it make that turn where it just goes like into like just crazy shitville?
I think that's level three. It starts to get level three because then some super troopers come out and they have Panzer Shrek rockets. And they're using these for anti-personnel weapons, but they're firing them from across the entire map, and they're 100% accurate. So it's basically, it becomes like, you know, the fireball throwing demons in Doom, where, mm-hmm. you know, they throw it in a straight line, and then you got to, like, juke it real quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The gameplay is like that, where you let them shoot it, you juke to the side, and then you can snipe them or something. So it mm-hmm. starts to get that way at that point. And then the baddies come out, and then the last level is basically... a World War II version of the Death Star, of a Death Star run from any of the Star Wars movies where the Nazis have a Death Star.
It's a trap.
Or Lord of the Rings, you know, I mean, if Tolkien was inspired by Nazi Germany and the Eye of Sauron or whatever is the equivalent of the Eagle's Nest, I mean, it kind of like takes it back and goes in that direction. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's a fun game. It's got, I mean, there's some frustrating shit about it and little ridiculous stuff. It's kind of worth pointing out because it's so funny that when enemies are on machine guns, like regardless of where of the gun's ability to traverse, the gun will fire on you no matter what. So straight down, you can go underneath it, and you'll see like it's like the tracer stream is coming out of like the vent holes on the damn things. So you're looking, there's a guy pointing here, and imagine like the bullets are coming out sideways at you. There's stuff like that. It doesn't kill it at all. It's a pretty fun game. It's just not, but nor is it like, hey, you have to play this. This is one of the best games of its category or anything like that. But I don't think you'll be disappointed playing it.
Just going with those expectations. That's
yeah.
Yeah.
And it looks, it's interesting. And the game's got a long, it had a long, you know, and seemingly troubled development story.
It has been a long development on this
one. It switched engines at some point. It was caught up in the hole where EA was going to, you know, force all of its internal studios to use Renderware because they had acquired that. And then they said, this isn't working. We're going to use Unreal Engine 3. At some point, they had a deal with, who is it that owns Jeep? Maybe it's just Jeep, you know, but anyway, the Willys Jeep, and there were supposed to be driving segments where you're into vehicles because they had the license with the official Jeep maker and stuff. And, and that's,
yeah. You like that shit.
Dodged a bullet on that one.
So I'd say for me personally, this one's the like make or break for this franchise. Like if this one's not good, I feel like I'm done.
I don't know. I don't think it, I no longer think it has to be that way. Like, I would say the same thing. Like, they've been dethroned a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they still fine. They still have their niche. They're just like the B World War II shooter series, you know?
It's like watching Rambo again or something.
Yeah.
It's like Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor.
Michael Bay's Pearl Harbor.
And they, another, just like on that line of thought, another thing is it was originally announced as it was going to have cooperative multiplayer, and they got rid of that and gave you just, you know, deathmatch, team deathmatch. I mean, team deathmatch or like a territorial thing, which is basically, you know, triple flag capture with the twist that you can play an airborne version of these where the allies airdrop in, their spawn is in the sky, and then they can land anywhere. And the Axis, they can shoot them out of the sky if you're good. From what a played, I'm kind of worried that that's not balanced because it's
going to be sniping them out of the sky.
It's more difficult to snipe someone out of the sky than the advantage you get from being able to land right over the flag you're trying to capture and throwing grenades on the dudes, on the Axis guys that are trying to recap it and landing, or you get killed, right? And you spawn again. Instantly, nearly instantly, you just parachute and land right behind the guy as he's running on the guy that just killed you, and then shoot him in the back.
Some of the maps like use level design to make it so you just can't parachute onto the flag. Like it's, you know,
no, you can parachute on anything. From the levels I played, you can land on anything, and the maps are all, they're basically just, you know, restructured from the single player.
Right.
It's still pretty fun though. It was definitely more. I had a lot more fun with it than I have had with the multiplayer component of a Medal of Honor game in some time. To say that.
So when do the rest of us get to play this? When's it coming out? Right. Any day?
September 4th.
Okay.
Yo.
So look for that at your local, at your favorite game store.
Is it spoiler time?
Is it spoiler time? How are we doing on time?
We're out of time.
Okay,
Wait, even for the spoiler part?
Technically, let's see what happens.
Holy crud.
We don't need to do, because we're trying to get out of here to do our one-up show.
They need to set up in
photo
here.
Shoot. Oh, they're doing it in here?
Yeah.
Let's just slam and jam then. Let's do, because I'm dying to talk.
All right, so should the rest of us, the three of us, will take off our headsets.
So, yes, we're about to enter.
You guys go wacky.
BioShock spoiler territory.
Now entering spoiler zone.
Turn it off if you haven't finished it. We're going to talk about everything.
I'll let Sean and Sean say their goodbyes on behalf of the rest of us, because we're all leaving. While you guys,
I'm gonna go back to playing the game. Damn it!
Finish it.
If you finish it, come back in here.
Okay. I'll finish the other half of the game really quick.
Now entering spoiler zone. Here we go.
So everyone's gone. Just me and Sean. You're in the black curtain room. Talking about BioShock spoilers.
Yeah. You've got the good ending, right?
I got the good ending.
Okay.
So I saved all the little sisters. It wasn't even a question in my mind that I was going to do that right from the beginning. Even though I knew, like, theoretically I wouldn't have as much Adam or whatever. I was just like, okay, they wouldn't make it so that it's that hard to do the good ending. Because just psychologically, I think most people, like, see a little girl, they want to save it.
Right.
So I think the designers would have, like, designed so that it wouldn't be that hard.
Yeah.
So that was my thinking. And I wanted to play again because I thought, you know, oh my God, so much is like hinges on saving these little stitches in this ending. And in the transitional moment.
I can confirm now because I got the bad ending. Uh-huh. I suspect the only difference, period, is the ending movie that they play at the
That's
end.
That's what I heard, yeah. Because
which is pretty bogus.
That is kind of bogus.
Like, let me get this out of the way, too. Like, okay. if you would have asked me for my thoughts on the game at any time, you know, that I was playing through it, and it still is. I think it's a phenomenal game. It's a gorgeous game, and it's great in so many ways. But because I just beat it last night, and I got the Bell ending,
I kind of want to talk about that because I like it so much and I want it to be, you know, just stellar game in every respect. And since that ending kind of like showed me a lot of stuff about the game that was kind of like, eh, might have done something a little better there. So for me, here, let's get out of the way. We'll go with the bad ending and then you can tell me what the good ending is. So I went there. I got to the bad ending through an indirect route. I saved the first little sister.
Okay.
Then after that, I was like, eh, whatever. And then so I harvested her.
Okay.
And then I continued to harvest little sisters for some time, all the way up until the point, and then, you know, here, spoilers are everywhere, that you discover that you are basically a puppet and you are constructed and are being played by Atlas / Fontaine. And after that big part, actually, like, immediately before that, it started getting, like, crusty. So immediately before that, before I went in and took out Ryan, I started saving him.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably saved about five or six before that. So what of course happens next is I end up in Tenenbaum's room with all the little girls. And I was thinking at that point, like, oh, they must like me a little bit because I've saved quite a few of them.
Right.
That word has to have gotten back to them. And instead, you know, they're drawing with crayons on the ground and they're all in their little nursery. And everything they say is like, oh no, he's the man who hurts us. You know, he's the bad guy. So that's what I assume on the good side, you're in that same place.
Right,
but they're
here,
like,
but,
oh, he's our savior.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a difference.
Well, so but they were not fucked up. Like they didn't have the glowy eyes or any of the.
No, they were all like.
I wonder if you killed every damn one of them, what would happen in
how, there? I know. I wonder, like, even the numbers. Yeah. Like, how would they explain that there were some good ones in there?
Right.
Who would have been saving them? Yeah. We'll have to confirm
now
that.
Now I have to play. Okay. So still have to play.
So after that, then. Even though that they were, you know, like, oh, they don't like me or whatever, then they still show me how to get out and whatever and work through. And I continue to save them. From that point on, I never harvested another one. And I assume because of the way the game was going, I was like, oh, this game has allowed me the option to redeem myself because Tenenbaum is still talking to me. She's working with me. Otherwise, why would she, unless, of course, you know, she has the interest in getting rid of Fontaine. But outside of that, she seemed to be like, oh, okay, he's cool. And entrusting me, you know, of course, when you become a big daddy, entrusting you with little sisters. So I was like, okay, well, maybe it's like actually put me back on the good path. And of course, then I do the end. And kind of like to before we get to that, that was pretty dumb too. The boss fight, the final boss fight.
Boss fight was like really out of place. I mean, it was
like
fine
another
boss
game.
Fight. Yeah, it was.
It just did not belong in this game.
It was
like even the
it would have been
look
a more
of that section. I mean, he kind of reminded me of I don't know if I can't remember if his name is Uranus or whatever, but the Street Fighter 3 boss.
Uh-huh.
it kind of reminded me of something ridiculous like that, and then his big, you know, his big crucifixion. Apparatus where he gets the Eve pumped into. I mean, where he gets the Adam pumped into him and stuff.
So, do the little sisters jump on him at the end of yours?
Yeah.
Too? Okay.
They still do.
Okay.
So you kill him, and then here's where it goes bad. It shows you a video, and so after playing this great game where they took the time to model a dead cat that can appear in, like, you know, three or four places in the entire world, or you know, microscope or something for one environment. Then they didn't even take the time to give me an ending more than this quick piece of shit Tekken type ending. Where they just play this arbitrary movie, and half the time, you know, when you beat Tekken, you're like, what the fuck was that?
Right.
It's like, it doesn't matter. Don't ask questions. It's Nina in the shower.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's all you need to know. So
King likes the children.
Basically,
the children like
a number of bathyspheres go to rise to the surface. You're in one of them, and there's, you know, some guys on the submarine that are there, and some splicers come up and kill them, and then it just shows you looking into a pod at one of the nukes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're going to take over the world or something. And then it's like, what the fuck was this?
Right.
So the problem I had is not only was it just stupid and it felt tacked on, but the whole thing with the game, you know, of course, it's making this big point about agency and the fact that you game players have very little of it.
That we are puppets to
the people who make the games. And, you know, the whole way you're going through this game, you're just doing stuff. And then it's like, haha, you've been under control. And it's like, well, you know, you've got the whole meta message there. But the one legitimate choice we have, whether or not we harvest the little sisters, goes unrecognized at the end. Because it's just this ethical binary. Were you all good or were you all bad?
Evil.
There's no redemption. There was no acknowledging the fact that, like, I did have this change of heart that perfectly coincided with the character's alleged, you know, self-revelation that he is not – I mean, that he is a puppet or something.
Right.
And so – instead of it being instead of the game reading it as like this, okay, well, here's an act of defiance. Once he learned he was a puppet, then he's fighting against it, and he's not harvesting anymore. That's the one choice he can make for himself, and he's going to make that. It just doesn't allow you that, and that kind of bummed me out, and it made me think.
It bummed me out too.
It made me think of it larger about the whole game too, where there's really, I mean, because the art word has gotten thrown around a lot with the game, you know.
Totally.
Here's art, and Variety reviewed it. It was the first game that they've ever reviewed. But then I looked at it, I'm like, okay, well, is there even any care? I mean, even the baseline, the point of entry for, you know, and of course, this is the problem with comparing art in one medium to one in another, in the same way that you don't expect character development in a painting. Many of the facets that BioShock shines in, and I would say is art, you know, aren't necessarily the ones that we associate with film and literature. But it did kind of bug me that because the game is concerned with narrative and telling a story, that there's really no character development whatsoever. Any that's there is in the past tense, like it occurs.
Right, it's like you're
recordings.
In a museum.
Yeah, you're in a museum basically. So you know, you hear that Tenenbaum, you know, underwent some changes and stuff, but all the principal figures that you're playing with now, they're already like they're sort of fossilized into who they are, yourself included.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that just kind of bummed me out. So and you told me about the good ending.
Well, the good ending was. It actually, like, I thought it was short. I've heard a couple people here say, it was too short. You know, it didn't quite go into it. I thought it was pretty pitch perfect but I, like, saved every single
one
of them.
Yeah, it was long.
But, yeah, the game is long, but, like, the ending itself.
Oh, okay.
So some people are complaining about the length of the movie at the end. Whatever. You can say what you got to say in 4 seconds and get out. Mm-hmm. But what happens? Do you want me to say what exactly happens?
Just go ahead. I'll play it again, but I don't mind hearing.
So, you know, all the little sisters jump on Atlas and stab him. And then out of a, you know, you get the bathysphere scene, but it's just one, and all the little sisters are in it too, so they're coming out and emerging into the world.
Right.
Then you get a series of really short cuts with some, like, narration where, like, you just see these hands, kind of like one's receiving a diploma, and they're girl, you know, they're female hands.
Yeah.
Handing a diploma, one, like, getting a ring on their finger, they're getting married. And then at the very last one is several of them on a deathbed, and your hand is there, and you're all aged. You got your little, like, link tattoo, and they just grab your hand as you die. So, like, there's this message that, like, hey, you saved these girls.
Yeah.
So I thought that was awesome. Like, yeah. I thought it was really cool and powerful.
That's better. I mean, that's less cryptic, and that sounds a lot more interesting than the version.
For me,
version.
I thought, I was like, yeah, that was an ending. that's how I felt.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean,
it was like, it was the kind of in your face, like, it was blatantly telling,
so
like,
you
fuck
got the bad
you,
ending.
Go play again. Like, that doesn't even count. Like, we're not even going to, like, can't even be bothered to, like, put together more than 30 seconds of a video for you.
Right. I mean, for me, the whole game.
Not even a newspaper.
Like, you know you're being manipulated the whole time in some fashion, because even the way they present Atlas at the beginning. Where he's just the voice. He's talking about his wife and kid. The first time you see him, you know, down where he's trying to save his family about the bathysphere and it all blows up, you never really get a close-up on him. And the bathysphere blows up, you never see his wife and kid at all, and you just have to take his word for it that they're dead.
Right.
That for me was, like, the moment where I'm just like, okay, something's up here. This is not the guy who I think he is.
Yeah.
And then even, so there, you know, you're being manipulated. Even the most awesome level in the game, in my opinion, the Sander Cohen level.
Which one is that?
That's the artist.
Oh, okay.
I love that level so much.
It
was badass. But, like, when they revealed the Would You Kindly... While I was playing it, I was like, okay, why am I murdering these people? Why do I not have the choice to not murder these people? Like, could I, you know... In some games, like a KOTOR or whatever, you might have some other alternative to, like, not just cold-bloodedly kill these people. Not that I'm...
So
not that they're good people. I mean, they're crazy.
In his whatever.
Right. He locks the door, and now I'm suddenly his, like, puppet to kill people.
Yeah, just so you can get out. Instead of trying to find him and kill him to get the key.
Right,
you
exactly.
You got to go and do his...
So that even there, I was like, okay, I'm being manipulated and let along. This game is not so much about the choices, so much as, like, putting you in these situations and going, how do you feel about that now that you did that, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and that, of course, is part of the plan, you know,
right.
Is that you are... I mean, those are the reasons you're doing that.
And it makes you feel really specific things. Like, after that whole Sander Cohen thing, and he's coming down his staircase, and there's all those, like, streamers going off. And
I shot him in the face the second
fucking
he
shot
appeared.
Him. I'm just like, fuck you! So, I guess if you don't shoot him, I was just talking to someone else over AIM about this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't get the key, obviously. And I like...
Oh, you don't have to fight him?
You don't have to fight him. You can just leave him. Well, you can let him walk away.
Crazy. That's cool. I like that.
And you don't get the key to the chest, but the chest had nothing in it. really of importance. And I didn't care. I was just like, I was just emotionally satisfied that I got to blow this.
I just figured because the structure of that level was so classic. For me, that level is when I started to become a little, you know, less pleased with some of the gameplay designs, because that one was so clearly part of a tradition of just making that kind of game. We built this environment. How do we keep you in it and get a couple hours of gameplay out of it? Well, let's have you hunt down four guys and kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's have you hunt down five of these objects. And it started getting into that, which, hey, like, we love Oblivion, and that's all that game is.
Yeah, it didn't bother me at all.
Again, this is just because I think this game is so rad. You want it to... It's one of those, there's so many times when you're playing it, and I'm just, like, smiling.
Uh-huh.
And it's because, you know, it's like, it's really so rare for me. It's like, since Half-Life 2, the stuff comes together so well. The music, I mean, there could be some, like, just the right time, a phonograph's playing in the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Some bizarre nut job is muttering, and it happens. You haven't been playing long enough where you hear the guy singing "Jesus Loves Me," you know, like a billion times, you know, and it's still all of it's coming together like just perfectly, and like, oh god, this is rad. Like, you want to alt tab and tell someone.
Yeah.
So much of the game is
there's
like
a
that,
lot of that.
For that reason, it makes me, you know, I'm being super picky about it now. None of these are things like, oh well, that doesn't get a 10 because of this or that. So don't,
right.
Yeah, don't get me wrong on that. This is more like, I really,
well, all the little things.
These guys made an amazing game, and
they totally
I'm so
did.
Thankful that it's there. And but this is kind of like, now that, you know, you promised us the moon, like, let's talk about how you could have given it to us, you know, in its entirety.
Right.
So that section.
I wonder if part of me wonders if they did want to do more, like, because, you know, you had your ending disappointment. I wonder if someone over there got to say, like, there should be like 9 endings depending on what you do. And they just didn't have the production time to do it or something. I wonder if that was a problem. Because I just can't imagine, like, Ken Levine just going, no, there's just 2, and either you save all the children or you get the shit ending.
And then you'd still have to, I mean, it still kind of like gives you this, you know, Zeno's paradox where you're like, okay, well, then do we allow them to have the good ending if they save the last 4?
Right.
Say the last 3.
Yeah,
what if they just say the last 1?
You got to make a lot of presumptions about what you're thinking
and then
you play,
again,
and you can't do that.
What's funny, though, is like so much, you know, so much of it's supposed to be this moral choice. And most of the time, for me, it was really just a game theory choice. Like, how it was super, and that could be part of the point, too.
Right.
But how do we get the most out of this? You know, am I going to get more? Am I going to get greater benefits by saving these or by helping them? And then if you make and so that, you know, you can get the good ending and not, you know, and not save all of them, then you start, you know, applying the game theory, which I don't mean video game theory, but general game theory, you know.
It would have been a real moral choice if, like...
Do I maximize my outcome by killing all but, like, 5, you know? I mean, whatever variation would break down.
Well, even you know going into the moral choice that if you save them, something good's going to happen. They even say that straight away. It would have been like a real moral choice if they say, you get half or you get double.
Yeah, and just surprise you. And they could have still hooked you up.
They could have.
But yeah, they really, it's funny. I mean,
they set that up.
That's their way of saying, like, just do the good ending. Because you're going to hate us if you do the bad ending.
I'm glad I did the good one. I mean, like I said, it wasn't even a question for me. I'm just like, I'm going to play saving them this time. Because that's how I always play games. I always play... Anytime I have a choice, like in a KOTOR or something, I'm always like the purest good guy I can be. I don't know why. It's just me. I don't know. Like I think I'm some sort of angel or something. It's just how I play these things.
Did you think it was kind of weird that every figure in this world that you interact with directly, with the exception of the girls after you've saved them, and then Ryan when you meet him, is basically a Dick Tracy goon? I mean, you know, like there's basically no equivalent of an Alex or a Dr. Mossman or, you know, an
everyone
Eli
is fucked up beyond recognition.
I mean, it's like, like it would.
They look like
to
crazy.
Some extent. Yeah. I wanted someone to like that was outside of this world of like, okay, here's just a bunch of like crazy fucking like rejects,
Jokers,
or gene rejects that are like.
Right. I don't know. I guess I kept thinking, I think that's what I was thinking when. During that Sander Cohen level when I was murdering those people, I was thinking, okay, there's got to be someone redeemable left in this planet, like in this underwater utopia. There's got to be someone out there. And I don't think these guys are going to be at, you know, the guy in the record store or whatever, but there's someone out there. And there really isn't.
Yeah.
Which is, like, I don't know, maybe that's just like, that was part of the message too. I haven't really thought too much about that. But yeah,
They all look like that. And I don't know why. I mean, do they ever really explain?
Just they're all.
Do they ever really explain? There's a lot they didn't really explain. Like why the little sisters, like, would have been out there when before culture had collapsed. Like, what were they doing? Like, why did they start that program? And
yeah.
And then you get some audio diaries where they're like, oh, I saw a little sister harvesting a corpse the other day. And you're just like, where did you see a corpse
lying
around?
Yeah, why is a corpse just laying around?
And you think about that for a second. You're like, eh, whatever. You know, who cares? Like, that room in the bar. I don't know if you got in there where there was the couple lying on a, like, sturdy old mattress.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you get that audio diary.
They were the parents of...
Michelle or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, it was that room where that dawned on me. But I don't know.
But again, that was like the room is the reward. Yeah, it was like their charred corpse was your closest like connection to real people.
Right,
know?
And they're all dead.
But so some of that nonsense too. I mean, like they try to explain, you know, why the little sister's role, why they're female, why they're young and this and that. But like I do, for them taking, you know, all things considered, I guess I'm saying the pieces come together very well.
They totally do.
And it was a difficult task to say, okay, we want to make this game, and we've got, on one hand, we've got all the stuff that we want to say about sort of Ayn Randian utopia visionaries, mm-hmm. and like just really sort of comment on like this thing taken to its just, you know, despicable extreme. Now, we also need to have a game where you fight.
Right.
And we also have to have a game where you have all these great powers because we want to allow you to basically freeze things and burn
right.
things and have telekinesis. And then, well, let's find some way to justify and putting all these different things together so we can have the game that is about, you know, this Randian dystopia. But it's also a game where there's oil puddles on the ground that are yep. there for you to hit with incendiary arrows, you know, that there's water everywhere so you can electrify it.
Just to interrupt you real quick, I think it's fascinating that we've been talking about this for 15 minutes and we haven't even got to, like,
to the gameplay. To the gameplay
stuff,
we're
just talking about, like, this world they created, which mm-hmm. I think is really telling.
That is it completely is telling because, like, in many cases, there's nothing to even say. I mean, people mm-hmm. will do this about Halo and stuff, but for me, that's the point I'm always making in my own biases that, well, not biases. It's more just, like, biases in the sense that I played, you know, Halo and various other games, and that's not the one that moves me
yep.
in the way that Bioshock and Half-Life 2 do, where I'm appreciative of the world, and I feel immersed to an extent where, like, I kind of forget about it. And like, there's actually moments I felt like such an idiot where, like, I would pull up my ice fist or some of my plasma power, and I'm just like, yeah, you know, just like,
ka-ching. Like, yeah, I'm badass.
Yeah, dude. So, I mean, that's when I'd know I was, like, really just, like, forgetting about being a critic and just enjoying this game.
Mm-hmm.
So other things I wanted to say, you know, it would have been nice if, you know, becoming a big daddy meant more than just, like, limited peripheral vision with the helmet on. I mean, at least give me the damn rivet gun or something, you know.
Right. I mean, you even had your sweater sticking out if you, like, show your arm.
Yeah. Yeah, you even
it's like, oh, you're still wearing my sweater.
That's yeah, nice. I mean, at least put some work in there for the payoff.
I thought that whole escort sequence worked well, like, emotionally, though.
It did, but I heard, did the little sister you were protecting die when you played?
Yeah, and I reloaded.
Oh, because they just keep coming out.
Yeah, I still, that was another one of those things where I'm just like, okay, the whole reason she died is just to make you feel bad, and the only reason I'm reloading,
because
I feel bad. And
to me, it was kind of
weird,
like,
that I felt bad.
It became a Medal of Honor type moment there, though. You know,
right.
Like, you know, like, okay, you see a corpse and she's going to, like, divert, you know, her attention to it. Then you're like, okay, this is when a bunch of guys are going to rush me.
Right, of course.
This is the equivalent of
time to put my cycle traps down and my pox mines. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back to this is a game for trying to make it for every possible person. Like, if they had, because that sequence is pretty hard.
Right.
Probably, like, the most difficult, at least it was for me, in the whole game, like, where you had to, like, actually, you had to set the traps and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the game you could go through without, you know, doing the environmental tricks.
Yeah, I didn't need the traps for... I found that playing with the PC, I almost never needed traps because I was so quick with moving between plasmids and weapons so that I could, like, throw out a decoy, electrocute someone, grab over to telekinesis and slam them with something as they're frozen or whatever the case may be, hit them with this gun, you know, and electric bolt.
Yeah, I do find the PC one... way faster at that stuff too.
Yeah,
I mean, you lose that, like, pausing moment, and I have to every time I reset my powers on the PC, I have to, like,
make sure
physically in my head go 1, 2, 3, 3 right. is this, 4 is this, 5 got it, go.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to do that. Because if you in the Xbox one, you just like hold down the shoulder button and it pauses the action while the radio menu comes up.
Yeah.
So you can, in game time, you're switching instantaneously, but like your own head, it's causing that, like, the same disconnect that when you start hacking something and the world freezes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that sequence, I mean, the whole game, what point was I trying to make? Oh, yeah. The whole, like, if you screw up, you get another chance. Like, you technically, any Big Daddy fight, all you have to do is just, like, walk up to him, unload your pistol, he can kill you, you'll go back to a fighter chamber, you run back up to him, shoot him, and then, like, you know, get 10% of his health every time you die.
Attrition and respawns.
It's like, you know, that was the same issue I had with Prey, where, like, you're just, like...
Yeah.
The penalty for death is just a little bit of time lost, and you get through anything.
It is the opposite of like Resident Evil 4 or something, though, you know, where you'd have to reload and do it again. And I kind of do. I like the Bioshock option more because, you know, rather than just having to do it over and over again, you know, or you can give up on it if you want, or you can or you can give up on it yourself by hitting your load key.
I do that
because you said, hey, I had too much 9 of things of Eve and I had, you know, 6 health packs and I wasted them all.
Sometimes I'll just do that just because I wanted to do it better, like mentally, and just like I could have done that way cooler or something like that. I just want to try it like the way I envisioned myself doing it.
That stuff is really cool. I think of it, I compared it to some of the best boss battles in Metal Gear games, in the Metal Gear Solid games. Like, one of my favorite ones, I forget their names, they're all so idiotic, you know, like Turgid Octopus or whatever. But
which one?
The guy, I think it was the guy with the something Raven. He had the Vulcan chain gun.
Oh.
And you fought him in the cold storage area, and his birds went and...
Yeah,
you
know,
that's why it's something
about.
Raven. Yeah. But you could do that by, when you go in there, you lay down mines, you can, you know, use your remote stinger, and there's all these different approaches to it. I mean, basically with the Big Daddy gameplay, and even, you know, some of the regular AIs in the game, it just really emphasizes that variability. I mean, like you're saying, you set down proxy mines, you can set down, and then you use a decoy to lure them onto the proxy mines that you set. You, hit him with, you know, like I was just mentioning, where you hit someone with an electric blast that stuns him, hit him with some, you know, with an explosive, you know, a canister or something with telekinesis, and then run up and hit him with your wrench, and that freezes him. Switch over to your shotgun and shoot him in the face with an electric buckshot. And that stuff's just so much fun. And also because it's designed similar in the way that fear levels were designed to allow the, instead of just being a rigid corridor, they create these little spaces with, you know, there are multiple entries and exits to any room, so that instead of your fight being, okay, I'm going to take cover, I'm going to pop out and shoot, and then they're going to return fire, and that's basically how it's going to go until I clear them, and then I'll move forward. A lot of times that's how Halo 2, that's how that worked as well.
Right.
So instead of that, you know, you're running more like a multiplayer experience where you're doing circles and playing squirrel around something. You know, there might be like a bar in the middle of the room, and you're going around that while you reload or like get the right ammo loaded up, anti-personnel or something. And because they're really mobile too, I was saying, you know, we were talking earlier about Medal of Honor, how just the fact that the AI is just moving around is good. It's cool in this, but of course, all to another level. I mean, AI that actually runs to a health station, that's such an awesome thing.
Yeah, that's crazy good.
And that's exactly, again, when I said multiplayer, that's what a human player would do.
Yep.
And then, but it's hilarious. I mean, you go and you're like, where the hell did this guy just go? And you're like, oh, there's got to be a health thing over there. And then you go around the corner and you hear him like, oh, that hit the spot or whatever. and that stuff's so much fun just because they don't, even the whatever spider splicers. Where they're,
the one on the ceiling.
The acrobatics and stuff. Yeah, I mean, they're just like, going all every which way, and they'll, you know, appear and reappear, and it's so much fun fighting them for that, you know. And then when you like catch them like with the fatal shot right in the middle of one of their somersaults or something,
yeah, that's just,
they kind of just like
awesome.
Plop out of it and their mask falls off. I mean, that stuff's really cool.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. What else to say about it? I mean, I'm definitely thinking more about, I thought about last night, and at first I was like really just on the NE. I was like, really? Because like, Japanese too. It was such an ending
such
for
a
Japanese game, where they just throw on, like, especially Silent Hill, they just throw on a bunch of these things and they want you to keep playing it until
there's a dog all the time. Okay,
yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, I was so satisfied with the ending, and I, you know, my experience was like that was pitch perfect, just because I guess, you know, I played it the one way that they thought it was supposed to be played.
Right.
Which I'm guessing that the proportion of people are doing that, are doing the good thing.
Just around the office, I think only one person did it the bad way. Plus almost like the nine other people I talked to were all like, oh, I saved them. Of course I did.
I didn't want my girlfriend to walk into the room. It was so funny. Every time I'd be like either harvesting or saving, I'd look over my shoulder
to make sure.
Let her coming in here and she sees you holding this logo. No. They needed some variety in that. Little things like that. I mean, I understand there are limits to both memory and how much, you know, VO work you can put on anyone.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're especially at least missions, you know, repeating themselves. And
like, yeah, because you're just like, how really all of these little sisters look exactly the same? But then when they saved them, they at least had different voices.
They had different hair color, yeah, and different dresses.
Oh, it's
and
the
stuff.
Blonde one.
Yeah. And also, too, good. With the guys, like the first time you hear like the Jesus Loves Me guy, you're like, okay, this is like genuinely creeping me out. Uh-huh. And the sound is so good in the game.
It's awesome.
There's so much. Like just ambient noise that comes in at just the right time,
mm-hmm.
and then the water and all
the Big
these,
Daddy
all
moan
stuff.
just sets me off every time. Yeah. I'm like, oh shit, there's someone nearby.
Sounds like a pissed off whale or something.
Yeah,
and but then you know it's like then you hear it so many times it really just does lose the magic after a while.
It happens. I mean, it's what, a 20-hour game or something.
Yeah,
you can't make every single one of every single minute of that.
But it would
unique.
It would be nice though.
It would be nice. That would be. Magic future.
Yeah.
I can't think of any game that's like that.
No. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the sequel, which is interesting.
Now.
It's inevitable, but here's the problem. Ken was, you know, we know he doesn't like to spend his time, I mean, his life making
sequels.
The same game over
yeah.
and over again.
So they were probably going to pass the torch to someone.
So, yeah, but at the same time, if this game is really selling all that as well as I suspect it is, you know, where we're going to start to see, like, the breaks a million figures yep. any day now. He's probably going to want to like continue to shepherd the legacy that he's created. I mean, it will
yeah.
be difficult to make this game and then just to hand it over to someone else. Maybe if he can just do like some kind of, I don't know, because you can't.
Maybe
you have
he's
to
got
have,
something else.
It's
just
not
like,
just
I
him who made the
story.
Game. I mean, everyone who worked on that, they're designers. I mean, the writers, everyone is like, you're going to need.
He's just up front.
Yeah. You're going to need all those people. And I can see him at least coming back to it again. I don't know. I think you do something that good and people respond this like uniformly well to it that like you want to go back to it. You want to mess with it some more. We're getting the notice. We got to get out of here. But
yeah.
Hey, the other guys will play. People will be sick to death hearing about the game. We could talk about some of the other things that we love so much about it later on. And yeah, we out because 1UP Show needs to,
blame the 1UP
they
show.
Need to shoot the intro.
We went long.
Photos of everyone.
We howl. All right, everybody.
All right.
We'll catch you next week.
We out.